Okay, good morning. So welcome to ED452 Wireless and Mobile Networks. And this module is a module offered to our undergraduate programs, but also shared with our postgraduate master's programs. So again, you'll see two different cohorts in here. If there's people you don't know, say hello, get to know them. A lot of you will know me by now. I'm Jennifer McManus, and here are all my contact details. I am happy to talk to you at any time if you can catch me. The easiest way to do that, to pin me down, is to send me email and make an appointment, and or just sort of catch me after the lecture. I will be sharing the delivery of this module with Dr. Hrishikesh Venkataraman. So he's in the back here, so stand up and say hi, Hrishikesh.
Hello. So I've been taking some lectures after five lectures from the coming months.
Yeah. So we will be switching off sort of in some pattern which is makes sense to us. Hopefully it will make sense to you as well. Again, Hrishikesh's details are here. And I'll venture to say that probably the easiest way to get in contact with him is by email as well. So to get rid of some of the usual administrative details, all course material will be offered on Moodle. And if you're registered for this module, which most of you are at this point, I think, when you log into Moodle, you should see it in your list of courses. You just click on it, and whatever we've made available to you is available. Okay. If you have any problems, they tend to sort themselves out with time, but if there are any sort of initial problems, send me email and I will give you a course key which will allow you to get into Moodle and look at the notes. All of the lectures for this module will be recorded via Camtasia. And so probably most of you have seen Camtasia delivery at this point. What you get is a screenshot of the slides with my voiceover as recorded in the lecture with all my ums and ahs and gentle snoring in the background. So anyway, if you're taking the course remotely, you'll see what you're missing by not being here. Okay, so in terms of the day-to-day delivery, 3 hours is a very long time. Typically, what I do is I break that up into two blocks. Okay, so we'll have a little more than an hour, a break in which you can get coffee or cigarettes or whatever, and then come back and have another block of material. Hrishikesh will have to sort of see what suits himself best, and he'll let you know. Okay, so are there any questions about that? Just some basic admin. Okay. So, again, what we're going to do today should not come as a shock for anybody, particularly anybody who's had one of my lectures before. We're going to start with a very high-level review of networks. If you've never seen the network before, this might be a little scary, Well, again, what it's designed to do is, for those of you who have seen networks or well familiar with networks, remind you of some of the basic principles that, you know, you should keep in the back of your mind whenever you're, you know, taking anything related to networking. And for those of you who haven't had networks, and again, I'd say at this point, that should be a very small proportion, potentially for your domestic students coming from different backgrounds. To give you, again, some indicator of sort of what are the sort of key conceptual ideas that are sort of critical to understanding sort of the philosophy behind networks. So if you are a master's student and haven't seen networks before, say a master's student, because all of our undergrads have definitely seen it, just reminding you, I give a few references, and again, it's something to sooner rather than later at least take a quick read of some of those references and get a basic idea. You know, I'm not gonna, you don't really need any of the gory details, more just, again, the philosophical idea of how things are going on. We'll get to gory details as they apply to wireless networks. Okay, so a very specific type of network. And so today, yeah, I won't do more than say a few words about sort of how they differ, again, from our traditional wired network, and just wrap up with a summary of what is goes into this module. Okay, continuous assessment, there will be one assignment due towards the end of term. I used to have two, but the fourth year's kicked up because it coincided with their final year project turn-ins. So there'll be one assignment. It will be based on a network simulator called NS2, and you'll examine some characteristics of wireless LANs using this network simulator.
How much is it worth?
I believe it's worth 25%. Okay. Okay. So, again, when we say networks, we're referring to a very specific piece of technology, and the common thread for this technology is that it is used to deliver data from one location to another remote location. And that data is digital. The purpose of doing this is to run an extremely wide variety of data applications. Okay. And so like examples are file sharing, web browsing, voice over IP, basic voice delivery, not over IP, streaming video, etc. And what you should appreciate is that this data, these applications have relatively broad and varying requirements for delivery. Okay. Now, at some point in the not too distant past, that the data could be broken up into much more distinct and smaller classifications. You basically had two sorts of data. You had voice streams, which were sent at a constant rate of 64 kilobits per second, and you had computer cooperates, there we go. You had then control messages and file transfer, so static data transfer, which again had somewhat different characteristics. Its generation was bursty. It didn't have this constant requirement of a constant rate of transfer. And on the other hand, loss was problematic for it, unlike voice. Okay. So you had these two disparate sorts of networks, and due to that sort of two disparate sorts of networks, grew up to transport data of these various characteristics. Multimedia data is a much newer phenomenon. And so a lot of modern networking is about sort of how you shoehorn this newer phenomenon in video streaming, et cetera, which everybody wants and loves and needs, into these original network architectures. Okay. So, again, we can think of historically, we would have these networks that were well tailored to delivering voice data or computer data of this control message or file transfer type. And then we've had this advent of sort of many more data services, the increase in entertainment data, which needs, again, or has a different characteristic. So again, as people expanded the sorts of applications that were run over networks, people started to look at how to classify these applications. And the main source for this, or the main resource for this classification, is the IPUT recommendation G1010. And again, just as a historical note, this was published in 2001. Okay, so we're not, again, it's quite recent history to think about people giving a lot of consideration to the requirements of data. Okay. And what the G1010 did, and you know, I don't test you on this ever, but was it looked at all of the different types of applications that were running over the internet, and then it tried to characterize them in a few parameters, so not as totally individual entities, but as entities that, you know, in some way could be grouped or classified. Okay, so yeah, are they one-way or two-way applications? What sort of data rates are typical for these applications? How do these applications respond to delay? How do these applications respond to loss? and then potentially some other data, like if you have video, you typically got a image stream and an audio stream, and those have to be synchronized. So the first thing G1010 does is just write those all down, and that goes on for quite a while. Again, I won't test you on that. And then, again, it tries to classify the types of traffic according to a few fairly simple parameters. Okay. And what we see here is that we classify according to whether or not the traffic or the data can, or the traffic can tolerate loss, and how the traffic responds to delays. Okay. And so you can sort of bin traffic into that, but again, be aware that that there are other things going on in the background, sort of overall data rates required, and potentially response to variation in delays. But we see that, again, the traffic has certain characteristics, and the networks may or may not accommodate those characteristics. You know, one thing we'll see is, again, if you think about your traditional networks, well, they were tailored, again, to essentially be one class within all these classes available, and they do that very well, and not so well on other classes. Okay. So, again, modern data has these characteristics. The networks historically delivered either voice or the control or file data, and within sort of classic networks, one of the basic areas of interest is how you rationalize the requirements of our modern data with the architectures developed for these sort of classic networks. And what we'll see with wireless networks is that, well, you have essentially the same problems. To some extent, wireless networks, again, started out either carrying voice or carrying this data traffic, and now are catering for other sorts. But since they are relatively new in the development of networks, more thought has actually gone into building in some features to deal with these sorts of data. Okay, so again, we'll be talking in great detail about wireless networks. What we're going to do now is move on and, again, do pretty much a basic review of classic networks. Okay, so data networks are relatively new phenomenon. Telephony networks, they're the late 1800s, computer networks, the mid-1900s. Okay. The basic ideas for networks have been around forever. Okay. So you know, way back in the, so there's a lot of history. People still wanted to convey data and messages over a distance, and you know, there were a number of ways they could use. They could send signal fires, semaphores, more of a code, smoke signals, messengers on horseback. Again, the reason to mention these is that they have some of the basic characteristics that you'll see in data networks. Okay. And so there's an idea that your communication is in some way point to point. You can send it from one entity to another. There's fixed distance to how far that point-to-point communication can go. So, you know, how far can someone see a fire? How far can someone sort of resolve a semaphore signal? How far can a horse run before it's tired? And if that's not far enough to get you where you want to go, then you have the idea that you can relay the message. So it can go from one point, when it's received at that point, it can be sent on to a further point. So you go from point to point to point to point. Okay. So, other issues, you have resource sharing. Maybe you can send multiple messages over the same medium. If you have a messenger on horseback, they can have a series of messages. And maybe routing. There might be multiple ways to get your message from point A to point B. So there are these basic characteristics of what you need to do to transmit your data over a distance. Now, we're interested in modern networks, the networks that sort of drive for support the internet, that support our phone system, etc. And so these networks are delivering sort of very specific pieces of information in the form of digital data or bits. Okay. Now, again, historically, there were two sorts of networks. The first one, or the oldest one that's of interest to us, is the telephony network. And so the idea of a telephone exchange was patented in 1878. A lot of the work for telephony networks is based on earlier, Morse code type networks. Okay. And again, they were designed to do one very specific thing. They were designed to carry voice signals. Originally, those voice signals would have been carried in an analog fashion. And since the 80s, those signals have been digital. Okay. The signals have that the telephony networks carry had a very specific structure. They were bit streams of 64 kilobits per second. Okay, and I see people thinking, where'd that come from? And that's the 8,000 samples per second, which is what's required to reproduce voice signals because of the frequency range. And then each sample was digitized as 8 bits. So for our purposes, not, again, it's not critical that you understand where that comes from, but you should understand that, again, the network was designed to optimize the delivery of a very specific sort of data.
Okay.
And again, that data is not packets. Whenever we offer networks courses, we start talking about OSI models, and that's all talking about the delivery of packets. This is not packet delivery,
at least traditionally. Okay.
Now, these days, we all know the telephone network does carry packets and voice and whatever you're offering it. Okay, so what characteristics did these telephone networks have? Well, the data had to be relayed. Yeah, if you want to get halfway around the world, you cannot do that with one big wire. The signal attenuates and won't go that far, even if you did have that wire strung along. That gets into the second issue, which is that you have to have resource sharing. You can't have a wire strung from every individual in the planet to every other individual in the planet. So somehow you have to limit the number of physical channels upon which data is sent. And then once you limit the number of channels, users have to share that channel. Okay. And again, if you recall, telephony networks are structured very hierarchically. So you have sort of access points which give you a fixed rate, and then as you go farther into the network, you aggregate more and more of these streams until higher and higher bit rates, flows of bits, again for the purpose of efficiency of the use of resources. The service offered by these traditional telephone networks is what's called connection-oriented. So you have an end-to-end connection. And the architecture that was used to give you the service was what was called a circuit-switched architecture. So in a circuit-switched architecture, you set up the end-to-end connection and reserve all the resources along that connection. Excuse me. Okay. So in terms of the quality of service, so in terms of sort of what can you offer your data, well, you impose a delay in setting up the connection. Obviously, there's a delay in just sending the data over a distance. Basically, you know, as long as you're sending data over a distance, there's nothing you can do about that one. There is a transmission delay, but it's fairly minimal because the data will be pipelined, so how long does it take you to form up the initial tranche of data? Within this sort of system, you can guarantee bandwidth because you're reserving your resources, but the price you pay for that is that if the resources aren't available, there's blocking, the connection is not set up. Okay, so that was our one first classic sort of network. Our second classic network is the internet. And again, this is nearly 100 years after telephony networks, 70, 80 years anyway. And it came about with the advent of computers. And The original purposes were, you know, fairly modest by today's standards. You want to connect the double terminal to a mainframe. Again, I still remember when I was in college, the first computer programs I ever wrote were on punch cards. Anybody know, hands up if you've ever seen a punch card in your life? Okay, one guy has seen a punch card. Anyway, a program consisted of a stack of cards. Each card had one command on it. You brought your little stack up to a window, smiled nicely at the guy and said, "Please, will you run this?" God help you if you dropped your stack, that was your program gone. And you had to type it all over again. So, being able to connect the dumb terminal to a mainframe and actually type in commands, again, one at a time to begin with, and I won't tell you about editing them, this was actually a very good thing. Okay. Dumb terminals, they were persisted, they still exist, not in to the degree they did. Even into the 1990s, this was a fairly common way of interacting with computers. Okay. Now, at some point, PCs entered into the scene in a big way. They've been around for, 70s, but they entered in a way that's, everyday users might have one and use them. And so the idea of computer-to-computer communication took off. And so essentially we're trying then to enable data exchanges from two different locations. And so again, now typical examples of that would be access to a website or Skype conversations. So you have data-to-data communications. But initially, again, the types of data you were sending were pretty modest. They were commands and potentially things like files. The government had a hand in the development of these initial data networks. And so one thing that they were keen to do is that if we had a war, our networks would stay operating. And so robustness was also a key design constraint for the original data networks. The underpinning of these networks is the TCP/IP protocol suite, and this was originated in 1973 and was approved in 1983 and is essentially still de facto standard, and in particular IP addressing sort of defines the internet. Okay, so again, what we see here is we have a network that was designed for a very specific purpose and a very different purpose from the telephony networks. Okay, it still has some of the same characteristics as telephony. The data has to be relayed. Again, signals degrade over distances, so you can't stretch your wires endlessly. And certainly in terms of robustness. And the resources have to be shared. Same reasons as for telephony networks. And we see that physically, you get something sort of similar to the telephone networks in that you have sort of access points, which allow you a certain amount of data transfer, and this data is aggregated as you go through into a core network for efficiency purposes. Okay, now the data that was transmitted over these networks, again, had very different characteristics from voice data. It was bursty in nature, which meant you sent sort of chunks, and then you didn't send something, and sometime later you sent another chunk, etc. And so, this data would not suit our circuit switch network, where we're, if you think of sending a very short chunk, if you think about the overhead of having to set up a connection to send that chunk over, it's not efficient for the individual piece of data, because it has to wait for all the stuff to be done, and it's not an efficient use of the network resources. You reserved all those resources just to send a tiny bit of data. Okay. So packet switch networks took a different view of how to allocate resources, and they allocated on an as-needed basis. Okay. And so this has, again, from a network standpoint, it can be quite efficient. The resources are given when they're needed, and if there's anybody that needs them, they can be allocated fairly quickly. But it does introduce problems for individual pieces of data. There's transmission delay. In particular, the networks are what's called store and forward, which means they have to be received and retransmitted at every intermediate node. So you do end up accumulating retransmissions. Again, nothing you can do about propagation. If it has to go halfway around the world, that just takes a bit of time. Additionally, because of the way resources are allocated on this as-needed basis and the store and forward nature, we allow data to queue and wait for resources if they're not immediately available. So with circuit switching, we blocked data if we didn't think the resources would be available. Here, we allow the data in, and then it just has to wait its turn. And so those delays can be significant depending on the usage of the network. Okay, so that's the history. We had these two different sorts of networks, which were optimized to deliver specific sorts of data. Since they were designed, the types of data that need to be transmitted have changed. And so there is sort of efforts in telephony and internet networks to converge into a single type of network that can handle all of the different data applications. And in particular, to do this, it has to consider the issue of performance requirements. Now, for the remainder of our review, what I'm going to do is just look very abstractly at how we can talk about networks and the services they offer, and to some extent the architectures that exist, the sort of physically how the networks are built to deliver on these services. Okay. And we're going to look at two specific areas, the area of resource allocation and then the area of layered network architectures. So again, how have networks been arranged to offer the services that they do offer? And so, again, nothing here should be coming as a surprise for the majority of you. If it is sort of surprising, then you need to pick up a basic network textbook and at least have a flick through. Okay. So again, we have these historical networks, and they were designed to deliver very specific forms of data. There is now a move to converge towards all IP networks, so essentially to offer all forms of data transfer over a generic network. Okay. What we're going to look at really here is, again, how can we talk about the architectures that have evolved? Okay. And so, very abstractly, what we can say is that networks offer data transport services, which can be classified in two ways: reliability, so we either make a guarantee that the data gets there, or we don't make a guarantee that the data gets there. And secondly, in terms of connectivity, so it can be connection oriented, so you can offer an end-to-end connection, or it can be connectionless, so any individual piece of data is on its own and not associated with any greater whole. And so again, what we can imagine is our applications that are trying to run end-to-end go along to the network and say, you know, I would like one of the four possible combinations. And so, again, the first thing that ought to pop out at you is that there's not a whole pile of quality of service in these basic offerings. So, in the basics, there's no guarantee on data rates, delay, or anything sort of time-oriented. Okay, so we have these four basic combinations, and again, they suit various forms of data. And so, again, we can characterize our network services according to those and attempt to fit the data to that. Okay. Now, the way in which networks were designed initially was to suit sort of essentially one of these four possible combinations per network. So telephone networks, again, were connection oriented and reliable, or required connection or, sorry, connection oriented and actually somewhat unreliable. And on the other hand, the data networks were connectionless, but had more of a requirement for reliability. Okay. So where this comes out, these requirements, is in the decisions that were made, again, for how do you share resources within the network. Okay. And so there are two basic choices for sharing services. There's circuit switching and packet switching. Okay. And again, in circuit switching, you reserve your resources and you provide a data pipe. And in packet switching, you sort of transmit the data sort of as, you know, you share the resources as needed as the data goes through the network. And again, be aware that those two flavors don't address all of the quality of service concerns that are, you know, again, particularly prevalent in modern data transmission, particularly multimedia transmission. So again, the idea of circuit switching, you make an end-to-end reservation of resources. So you have a certain bandwidth and switch capacity allocated to an end-to-end connection. This is circuit-like, so it guarantees certain performance parameters. The price you pay for that is, well, in the terms of the call setup, and obviously from the network perspective, in terms of efficiency, depending on usage. The network, again, would like to be sort of moving as many bits through as possible. So if you have these reserved resources, then you're at the mercy of the end users as to how they should use them. Okay. So one of the key elements of that, again, is the sharing link bandwidth. And I'm sure you've all seen this before. That can be done either using frequency division multiplexing or time division multiplexing. So you divide your link up into, or you can transmit your signal through a number of frequency bands, and again, the characteristics of the link and the modulation schemes you use will govern how many of those you can fit onto a given link. Your other option is to divide time up into slots and then essentially allocate slots in turn so that everybody gets to transmit every so often. And you can also sort of split use those two in conjunction with each other. But anyway, the idea there is primarily that you split your link up into sub-channels, but again, once you have those sub-channels, they are allocated to one specific user. Okay. So, packet switching, which again was historically used for data networks, takes a different approach. So for circuit switching, you think of having these data streams. For packet switching, you think of having distinct chunks of data or packets. And these packets are allocated the network resources on an as-needed basis. And so while a packet is being transmitted, obviously it has the full use of that resource, but once it's been transmitted, it has no further claim to that resource. And so this can be a very efficient use of the link resources. As long as somebody's there to use it, it will get used. But it allows for the possibility of resource contention. So multiple, there can be more demand for a resource than there is resource available, and in this case, packets will queue, and your waiting times, your delays increase. And additionally, the way these are set up, a packet has to be fully received before it can be forwarded on. So you also introduce store and forward delays into the network. So even under ideal circumstances, packets encounter delay as they are received and retransmitted as they go through the network. Okay. The sharing of the link in these cases is referred to as statistical multiplexing, and essentially all it means is that if there's packets waiting to use a resource, the resource will be made available for them. Typically we think of that resource being made available on a first-come, first-served basis. So you get there and you queue up. Other options are available, so you can prioritize those queues or whatever. But the packets are sent out in some way along the resource, as long as there are packets to be sent out. Okay. So, again, the statistical multiplexing can lead to queuing delays. Additional to that, when you send a packet, it has to be fully received at a node before it's retransmitted, which means that you have a transmission delay at each node along the way, and again, those can build up. Okay, so why do we use this? Again, for the purpose of efficiency. If our users have a characteristic that they don't need a link all the time, so in this example, each user only needs a link about 10% of the time. Now, we can't predict what 10% that is. It's not necessarily a regular 10%, but 10%. And they have certain requirements when they need the link. Well, if you use circuit switching where you have to reserve all your resources, well, you have to reserve on the maximum requirement of the user. And so you can get 10 users out of the system. Now, if you have packet switching, you don't have to rely on the maximum requirements of the user. Again, they can queue up and wait if they need to. And again, if you rely on sort of a random distribution and things, or not everybody wanting it at the same time, then you can take 35 users, and the probability that more than 10 of them are active at the same time is very small. And so what that says is that you can, without at all affecting performance, you can get in a lot more users. Okay. So the more efficient use of the resources. Okay. So, if we go back to our quality of service thoughts, one advantage of circuit switching is that you can actually guarantee bit rates. Again, the reservation system, which again is much more difficult with packet switching. The price you pay again is in the connection setup. So, if for instance you're sending small chunks of data, the connection setup is going to potentially outweigh any sort of problems that the packet might encounter within the network. And so even for sort of individual packets, there is an issue that circuit switching is not always optimal. Okay. But for things like data streams, where you know, again, you need guaranteed rates for the long period of times, connection circuit switching allows you to do that, and packet switching, it's at least more difficult. It's not impossible, but it's more difficult. Okay. And so what we see is that, again, historically things were fairly clear cut. You know, data did very well on packet switch networks, voice did very well on circuit switch networks, and everybody was happy. Now we have a scene where we have different forms of data, for instance, video streaming, where quality of service, again, is a bigger issue. And so to some extent, we'd like to be able to perform, give bandwidth guarantees, etc. Typically, this doesn't happen in wired networks. What we'll see with wireless is that, again, because they were being developed when at the same time as these new data were emerging, wireless networks don't have the problem solved, but they at least give more thought to potentially how you could possibly solve some of these quality of service problems. And we'll see that as we go through the various types of wireless networks. Okay, so I'm going to call break now. When we return, we'll have one last topic in terms of review, and that's the idea of layered architectures and networks. And then we'll say a few words about wireless networks and sort of where we're going with them and you know, how they compare to wired networks. And then I'll let you go, so it won't be the full 3 hours today. Let's say 15 minutes, so 20 past.